Well, the weekend's over, so it's time to chat about it. Got a midget and a Jew, so why don't you sit down and listen to a no podcast during lunch, dinner, or breakfast. Brad Williams and Adam Ray are here for you any time of the day. So come on and treat yourself right. It's about last night.
Water and Tylenol.
Fluids,
yeah. Well, instead of Tylenol, you're going to take the Motrin.
Just go to the Health Center. They'll give you some condoms. At USC, that's what they did for me.
Yeah. Oh, I used to get them in Arizona all the time. That's if funny. You go in with a fucking hangnail, they give you condoms.
Of course.
Sure.
Are we recording? I just want to talk about this, right?
Yeah, let's go.
Are we?
Let's do it.
Yeah.
You're on.
We just started. So we're just saying Gary's got a little bit of an illness, and you were trying to help assess the situation.
Yeah, he's got diarrhea and arthritis and cough and stuff.
And I jokingly said, just give him some condoms, but no joke, at USC, where we all went, right?
Mm-hmm. I didn't go to undergrad there.
You went to grad school there, but you're still a Trojan at heart. We claim you.
You can claim me, and I love the medical school. It was fantastic. But
it's highly regarded,
there. Well, when I was there, it wasn't quite what it is now, but I've been teaching there for a long time.
Right.
And watched the caliber of students just skyrocket. They're so great.
Are there a lot of big time people in the LA community from the USC medical school?
Oh yeah, yeah. Pretty much everyone that practices in the East Side, you
produces
know, like
some.
We came out of SC medical
school.
So
now, what about the people at the health center though? That literally, I walked in there one time and my throat was swelling up, and I felt like I was swallowing over a softball. Turns out I had epiglottitis.
Oh my gosh!
Where like my
your epiglottis.
Yeah, was so basically they showed me and they put a tube up my nose to look at my throat.
Yeah.
My air passageway was just about like 25%. More to be covered, completely covered up and swollen shut. Doctor was like, if we don't get some
steroids,
in you, you're going to just suffocate.
Yeah.
And I went to the health center at 7 a.m. I ended up going to the doctor in Beverly Hills at like 10:30. But at 7 a.m., the health center was like, oh, here's some penicillin. Go home. You'll be fine.
Oh, my God.
And then they also, but I joked. I was like, are you guys just going to give me condoms? Like, I'm swallowing over I don't think just penicillin is going to, I think it's more than that. They're like, nah, we don't.
But did they give you condoms?
They did because I was like,
they took one look at you and thought, oh yeah,
this guy needs to wrap
this
up.
This GC.
No, there was one time when I went in to the USC Health Center for I had some lower back pain, and they told me like, oh well, you probably need to have your tonsils out. and that was their
but
legit.
You know
thing.
That the student health services at SC are outstanding.
Yeah, they are.
They are really good.
Yeah, well, then why are they taking my tonsils out if I have back pain?
Well,
no, I'm
back
I'm,
pain's inconsequential.
I'm sure they're fantastic, but they were just asking whatever questions. So how does it feel, Dr. Drew, who was our guest, Dr. Drew Pinsky?
That's
a new podcast of 2013.
Oh, yeah, crazy. That's Adams.
It was
weird.
Cool.
Yeah.
That's really awesome.
That was nice.
There's a lot of podcasts.
I discovered that. I didn't know.
There's a lot of podcasts, but there's also now a solid number of great podcasts. So
yeah.
It's just,
Well, it's like TV. There's plenty of channels that show Breaking Bad and Mad Men and things like that.
And then there's Honey Boo Boo Telethons.
And then there's Honey Boo Boo. So there is the vast spectrum.
It's dilute, yes.
Speaking of her, when that happened, I mean – Honey Boo Boo.
Yeah.
And I will just refer to it as that. But like
the outbreak of Honey Boo Boo.
You know, we found her Life Changes. I did a daytime talk show.
Yeah, right. I watched the interview with her you and her.
I think you saw the HLN interview probably.
Oh, okay, yeah.
But I did an interview with her a year and a half before that.
Before she was a star?
Before she was a star. She had just done the Titles and Tiaras and my producer saw it and went and got her. They just took camera and we're going out there and take a look at this. And then we brought her in. I was her first interview.
What did you think? I mean, can you even try to describe?
I drank go-go juice. I almost vomited right there on the stage.
Oh, God.
Yeah, it was awesome. And I thought,
she's going to get a little bit of a run here.
No, I didn't expect. Well, I didn't expect it to be huge like this.
Right.
I thought it'd be sort of a novelty thing here and there.
Pop culture phenomenon.
It was a phenomenon.
You couldn't predict that.
No.
Now, you, as a physician, do you look at things like that, like when parents shove their children into things like pageants and putting their dreams on them? Is that. What can that do to a child?
It can cut both ways, obviously. I mean, a lot of young women will talk about the pageant circuit as having been something very positive for them.
Right.
They liked. Other ones will go like, oh, for sure. The real problem is, from a psychological standpoint, is that the mom and the child become sort of united on a subconscious level, like because the moms will always say the same thing. She loves it. She insists on it. She wants to do it. Right. And of course,
she was writing in her diary in the womb about how she wanted to one day.
There's a symbiotic thing going on where the child may like it, but the mom's driving it.
Yes,
and so that can create difficulty in individuation and stuff.
You developed an interest in helping young people. Like, at what point in your medical career? I read this quote that said my goal is always to be a part of pop culture and relevant to young people, to interact with the people they hold in high esteem. Do you just feel like the kids have
that's
more...
a weird quote. That doesn't sound like me.
No, that was actually Gary Busey on the set of Black Sheep.
That does not sound like me. Yeah. But here's what happened is...
Why such an interest in young kids?
I'm going to tell you. Yeah. I got sick at 19. I got panic attacks and depression and a disabling panic attacks. And I didn't know what the fuck was going on. I just knew I was miserable. And I somehow intuitively knew to go to mental health services. And the mental health services said, you're coming apart here. Go down, talk to the doctor, maybe give you some medication.
Right.
And so I went down to the health services, which is for college kids. It's the college camp at the health service.
Yeah.
And the guy looked at me and went, you need to get it together. You need to take some long walks or something.
You need to get it together.
And I'm like, I would get it together.
That's such great advice.
And then I continued to get horrible management for about 18 months. I mean, really suffered for about 18 months. And I ground through it all. I made it through, but it was unnecessarily miserable.
God.
And I thought, wow, I don't ever want a young person to go through this.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And so when I finally became a physician and stuff, I was sort of like – fascinated with the idea that there was no adolescent health services. I mean, it was just sort of starting to evolve, and that adolescents had very specialized needs. And I was asked to be on a radio show because the radio K-Rock was behind my condo, basically, where I lived, apartment where I lived. And I was like, all right, I'll come up there, see what it's all about. And I was like, oh my God, they're coming here for the really important information. Can I come in every week and just do this? And so for 10 years, I thought I was doing community service. Free. I would just come in every week and do it one night a week on Sunday. It was originally midnight to 3 a.m. Then it became 11 to 2.
That was my radio slot at USC for 1 year. Midnight to 2 a.m.
Everybody has those kinds of histories, right? Mm-hmm. And I became more and more interested in the fact that young people, really the trajectory of their lives are established in those years, and they have specialized needs, and you have to be attuned to that to really deliver what they need. And then I started thinking, I don't ever want anybody to have to deal with what I dealt with. That was bad.
Are young people more susceptible to addiction? Can they get caught up in it more than an adult can?
No. Addiction usually takes a long time to really spiral out of control. But major mental illness, most mental illnesses begin – symptomatology begins to manifest 18 to 24. That's when it comes on. So real depression, bipolar, panic, all stuff comes 18
to 24. For me, from age 8 to 11, I was addicted to brown sugar Pop-Tarts. So Pop-Tarts.
Pop-Tarts. I like fudgicles.
Fudgicles are the best. We all have our vices.
But for me, I was a bigger kid and definitely had a food – I don't know if I want to even say addiction, but it was a result of my parents' divorce. I think I started
using,
it was comfort food.
Mm-hmm. Eating to manage feelings.
Of course, which you don't you don't understand that that's what's happening at that age.
No, kid you're just can't be objective about that.
You're just throwing cookie crisp in your mouth and it tastes delicious.
Yeah, tastes delicious.
I'm just eating that.
And by the way, it's their fault. It's not my fault that they made it so tasty.
Just good.
But is that a consistency with when kids do the obesity problem? Is that really – does it have to always stem from something else to then make them go to eat?
You're asking an interesting question because the Michelle Obama would have you believe it's just bad choices.
Right.
Well, I for sure that's an important piece of this. And if you go stand at a 7-Eleven someday and look at the shit that people pile into their mouth.
Sure. There's nothing good.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
But – The predominant issue that's going unattended is exactly what you're talking about. That people are affective machinery.
Right.
They can't regulate their emotions, and so they go to the food to do so. That's really the problem. Really is. Trauma is really the problem.
I mean, I replaced the lack of a father figure with macaroni and cheese and spaghetti and meatballs. And I got to be honest, Dad. Hey, man, don't miss you that much. That shit was delicious.
You could barely measure up, right?
To be honest, the Trix Rabbit is a pretty good father figure.
Yeah, yeah.
Just don't, stay away from the kids.
For sure.
Now, Drew, you've been a large advocate for mental health. I know you had the football player Brandon Marshall on your podcast.
Yes.
And he got fined for in Breast Cancer Awareness Month, October, instead of wearing pink cleats, he wore green cleats because that's Mental Health Awareness Month as well.
Yeah.
And Marshall got fined for that, and you were a large advocate. And I feel that when – and we just had another school shooting, I think, like three days ago.
Don't even start me.
Yeah, yeah.
It's one of these things where whenever there's a big trauma – there's okay. We got to talk about gun control. We got to talk about this.
They're missing it.
No one talks about what's causing someone to actually pick up an assault rifle, go to another human being, and say, "I could end this person's
and
life."
Forget the cause.
Yeah.
The cause is easy. Why didn't they get help, and why wasn't that help required as, say, a contingency of being able to continue in school, for instance? Sure. I mean, there are ways to leverage people into their treatment when they're dangerous to themselves and other. Let me tell you something. Yeah. This may be the time. How much can I bore your audience?
Fire away. Please.
Go? Okay.
No, yeah, bore away.
Do you guys ever take any ethics classes when you were at SC?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. Remember the paradigm with the fat man in the trolley?
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
Okay. So the basic paradigm for your audience is that a trolley is rushing down the tracks and it's going to run into five people unless you pull a lever and that takes the train and moves it in the direction of some innocent bystander. You kill him, but you save the five people. Do you pull the lever? Most people will pull the lever. Now, it's the exact same thing, though, to say you're standing on a bridge next to a fat man. There goes that trolley heading for those five people. You can push the fat man off the bridge in front of the trolley and save the five people. Do you push the fat man? Most people say no. And the reason being, it's like, well, we have no right to do that to the fat man. You know, who are we to kill him to save five people?
Also, the fat man is John Goodman in Roseanne's My Favorite Show of all time.
Right. It could be a really important person that we're pushing. Sure. Who are we to do that? Even though the paradigm is the same. Something about the proximity really troubles us. We can't do it. But no one ever says, how about if you could push the fat man off? And he has a miserable couple weeks as a result of being pushed in front of that trolley. But he ends up better than he ever knew he could be. And you saved the five people. Now do you want to push the fat man off? And that's my point with mental health. It's like they don't have insight into what's wrong with them. They don't want the treatment, but they need it. It can make them better. And by the way, they're not going to shoot the school up.
Yeah.
They're going to save the five people. So don't we have an obligation then to do it?
Absolutely.
To push the guy off the bridge if it's going to make him better than he ever knew he could be? And his illness makes him impossible to have the insight to know that he needs this or to want it or be willing to cooperate with it. It's incumbent upon us who have some knowledge, who have some expertise to go, no, sorry, you go in front of the trolley. We got to save these people down here and you're going to benefit. We know better. We have a right. We have an obligation to do that.
We do have an obligation.
No one will do that anymore.
What do you think?
Who are we to say? We have a right to do that.
Yeah,
that's
we don't have the right. It's intrusive.
No right. Who are you to say? There are people that
even when they know that lives could be saved, it's like, well, we can't.
Well, who
we
are we?
Even,
who are you to say?
Who are we to?
Right.
We are the ones that can say. We do know the difference. And fuck's sake, we got to do something about this.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm talking about when these people. Like the kid in Aurora, I guarantee you somebody got in the way of his treatment. I guarantee you somebody went, oh, come on now, Ms. Psychiatrist. You can't say he has to take his meds. He had a psychiatrist who was writing to the school saying there's a problem. And I guarantee you somebody went, oh, calm down, lady. Let him be. He's a nice kid.
Yeah,
he's a nice kid. He's a little screwball, but he's a nice kid.
We know.
People that have training know how to distinguish between somebody who's going to probably shoot up a theater and somebody who's not.
So how that kid – so there are – and kids like that, all the kids end up doing the shootings. There are always enough signs for somebody to be aware to go.
The Boston bomber was hearing voices and they were calling him schizophrenic. Mom said, no, he needs religion. The kid in Newtown.
Okay,
Mom hadn't spoken to him in 3 months. He had his windows boarded up. He was so paranoid. Don't leave him alone. He'll be fine.
Yeah,
Mom.
He's got his video games in there.
It's the parents' denial that in those cases that got in the way. In Aurora, we're going to find out something at this was in the school just last week. It was Arapaho. We're going to find out
Colorado.
Something. That kid had ravings on his website about how the government was intruding. Paranoid. Somebody needs to go. Hey, the kid's paranoid. Get him some help for Christ's sake.
Do you think?
Can't do that. Who are you to say? Who are you to say, dude? God. Come on now.
Do you think it's this level that we've gotten to as a society where everyone is an individual? We let everyone
do their own thing.
There's
three things. Yes. Who are you to say? Everyone's an individual. Everyone's perfect. Everyone's wonderful.
Mm-hmm. I got my own life to worry about.
We can't trust authorities, so doctors don't know what the fuck they're talking about. And this is the bigger issue, and this is the one that really I think needs to be addressed. Individual rights supersede everything.
Yeah.
And I said that once on TV, and we go, "Oh, you'll just sound just like Adolf Hitler. We could take you. We know it's better for you." It's like,
that's not a jump.
No, I'm not a Nazi. I'm not saying you have to do anything except not harm other people.
Yeah.
And you can be, and if you don't look within your rights to find other alternatives and stuff like that.
Sure.
Cool. Do it. Work with us. Fine. Can't hurt other people. Your rights got to be somewhere. We have to intervene a little bit on other people's rights if they're going to harm lots of other people.
Absolutely.
Now, how much of that, like the mental illness that these kids are dealing with?
And by the way, let me before
yeah,
you
for sure.
People can. We should have a thing where three or four doctors have to sign off on somebody requiring treatment.
Oh, right.
You know what I mean?
It can't just be one.
Hey, we're going to force you to have treatment.
Yeah.
So, all right, go ahead. I'm sorry.
How much medication is it a case by case basis? Like if some of these shooters, like the kid, the Aurora guy, had a psychiatrist. I mean, was that person also probably prescribing some medication?
And the kid probably wasn't taking it.
Right.
And who are we to say? The kid in Virginia Tech, manic as hell, severely psychotic, repeatedly sent, he was hospitalized against his will multiple times. Yet at school, writing papers, apparently, he heard stories about the crazy papers he was writing. And no one went, hey, you can't sit in this classroom unless you take care of that because you're dangerous. This is not okay. This is not, hey, you're just a creative person. You're perfect as you are. Sure. No, you're sick. You have illness. It's an illness, a brain disorder. If he was sitting there short of breath with chest pain, they'd require him to go to the doctor.
You're so right.
Somehow, because it's the brain. Oh, who are we to say? It's the brain.
Wow.
It's your individual brain.
It's something to where you can't, even though you as physicians can see the problems. I think maybe it's something to where if you have a shortness of breath or whatever, as you described, those are symptoms that the general public has been led to identify. We know what that is, a bruise. We know what causes a bruise. But when someone's just mad or crazy or has voices,
we are foolish about it.
We can't see that.
And then I get shit when I get in the public. I go, hey, this guy that did the pony video, was it pony or Coney or what was that?
Coney, yeah.
Oh, Coney. Yeah. Coney video.
When he went to San Diego.
Let's look at the video of that guy.
Sure. And I'll show you the video of the guy naked, masturbating, raving. Mm-hmm. That's acute manic psychosis. If I were in medical school, if I were teaching medical students, and we're going to study manic psychosis, I would show that video.
No shit.
Because that's. What's the difference between looking at somebody across a room or across electronic media? It's the same thing.
Yep.
These things manifest behaviorally and with certain symptomatology that we look at on video. That's how you teach medical students psychiatry. And so people go, who are you to say? Who are you? You don't know him. You don't take care of him. No. If you show me a picture of a rash, I can pretty much speculate what that rash is. A picture of certain behaviors. I can pretty much tell you what psychiatric problem that is. And we just somehow can't get that through our head. There are certain things that we can learn about, and they can help us identify people that are in trouble.
Yeah.
So they can be referred before they stand out in the corner masturbating without their clothes on. They didn't have to go there. It didn't need to go there.
And is it this thing where when you try to give advice and you try to say like these are the signs and then the either the parents, friends or the
individuals often you lose insight when you have mental illness and you're often resistant because you're agitated, grandiose and stuff. And then the families don't want to admit that they have somebody with mental illness.
That's a big part of Michael Jackson, right? I mean like everybody, all the yes men around him and everybody. Yeah. Nobody.
But every family. Who wants to – you know, when you're close, sometimes you miss. You don't want to see it. You know, you don't want to see mental illness. You don't want to see any kind of illness in your kids and stuff.
You even had something that happened pretty recently with a celebrity, the whole Amanda Bynes situation.
Oh, yeah.
You were saying, when it was just she was had the wigs and she had the weird photos,
you said,
this is a mental illness.
This is bad. This is not Miley
Cyrus.
Seek
for attention.
No, Miley Cyrus is making artistic choices.
Yes, sure.
Amanda Bynes was manifesting overt, severe mental illness.
Yeah.
And let's really think about how severe it was. Everybody take a good look at that. That was 6 months against your will in a psychiatric hospital.
Right.
That's pretty profound. That's how ill she was.
TMZ is saying
it's schizophrenia and bipolar disorder, two major mental illnesses. Mm-hmm. And treatable. I hope she'll be the poster child for, you know, good recovery from these things. And by the way, the schizophrenia thing, I've seen that misdiagnosed a million times.
No kidding.
Bipolar sometimes gets – people will say schizophrenia. They don't mean it. Sometimes bipolar plus some drugs.
Maybe it's just really good weed. Yeah.
Like, oh, no, not
he
just
He saw
weed.
Jurassic Park
weed,
in his
More
basement.
Like some hallucinogens or something mixed in there. It's cough syrup, whatever. You know.
Oh, really?
It can look like schizophrenia.
And then now I just think it's interesting because you were one of the advocates that was saying this woman needs
help. Well, I also said leave her alone. I said leave her alone. When the time comes, she'll get it, and that's what happened.
Yeah.
Does that contribute to the problem? The amount of just attention that some of these people get. I guess when you're dealing with like a celebrity,
not really. Well, I don't know. I mean, it's just the way these things are manifest these days. But what bothers me is the people who are so ignorant. Mm-hmm. And are either making fun of them or dismissing them. It's like that you're part of the problem.
Sure. Yeah. Well, because no one's making jokes about Amanda right now because it's like, oh shit, this is real.
And by the way, no one, if she was bleeding from her leg having been ripped off or something, you wouldn't laugh at that. It's no different. But the effing public need to learn about this stuff. So it's easy to identify.
And you are an advocate of obviously medication to help like the bipolar and all that stuff.
Obviously, we overdue medication. And medication needs to be, you know, a temporary solution. It shouldn't be a long-term
medication. Pill abuse is what? One of the biggest?
Oh, please. Don't even go there. Three-quarters of overdose deaths are pills. People don't die of heroin or cocaine anymore. I've lost one patient in the last 8 or 10 years from a cocaine, steroid, alcohol thing. Everything else was pills. Everything.
I mean,
lots of patients.
It sounds like a stupid question, but what is about the pills combined with the other stuff?
It's not combined with. It's the benzodiazepine, which is the Valium Xanax class, with the opiates, the painkillers, have a very high synergistic potential to suppress respirations. So people will take, you know, double down on their Xanax, double down on their OxyContin, go to sleep, and then just stop breathing.
Wow.
And that's much more likely to happen than with, say, just shooting heroin.
Yeah.
Fuck. Well, yeah. It's crazy.
So that's what – I mean, Heath Ledger?
Heath Ledger, absolutely. That was the beginning of the tidal wave. And people went, oh, well, he just thought he was the Joker, and doctor gave him some medicine to sleep. I guess he overdid it a little bit. No, it was the usual thing. It was a benzo-opiate combo, and that's that.
And maybe some booze and other stuff.
No, you don't even need that.
Yeah. Can this happen off one time, or is this after repeated
usually
uses, repeated
you know,
doses?
Well, it can happen after one time, but usually people escalate it. You know, they're taking a little more, and they may not even be feeling that sedated from it, but the respiratory suppressant effects, you don't get tolerant to that.
Yeah,
because you get tolerant to some of the sedation.
And it's scary because, I mean, people, like you say, are fast to go to the pills. Right now, I'm going through some back pain where I have some muscles inflamed.
Brad ate 20 Flintstone vitamins on the way in here. And
after the Dilaudid.
Yeah.
But like I've just been taking Advil, and
does that help?
but it helps immensely because it helps for
inflammation.
Yeah, inflammation. But I've got friends who just say, "Oh, I've got Vicodin.
Yeah, yeah.
Here,
I can't tell you
Vicodin.
How many.
I've got Oxy. Oh. Take some Oxy."
The access to it is right. I mean, it's just I feel like you could turn your head and somebody's like, "Oh, just take take one of these."
What's something like? What is it? 80% of the pills. Opiates prescribed in the world are prescribed in this country or something. It's some out crazy amount. Like, I don't know what the number is, but it's insane, whatever it is.
Which is just legal heroin.
And if you want to understand the sort of biological basis of it, of the addictive part, I'm a case example of how varied the biology, the genetics of the biology of the relationship with opiates can be. Mm-hmm. I feel like total shit when I take them. I can't stand them. And I'm a little jealous of people that like them. What am I missing?
Yeah.
I had big prostate surgery recently, and I took some. I felt horrible whenever I took it, and I was sort of a week out, and I was still feeling terrible. I thought, I'll try this pain medicine again. I'm like, I am never going to take this shit again. I just feel so awful for like 12 hours afterwards.
Now, is that because you know –
I can't describe what it is. It's just
really?
Awful.
Do you think it's because you know the possibilities?
No, it's just my genes.
It doesn't work.
It works a little bit, but the amount of – it causes actual misery. I actually feel miserable.
And is it fine to just reject that and not –
I just don't take it. I can't take it. I'd rather feel pain than misery.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's weird.
And do the doctors know? I mean, do they know that going in, being like, "Oh, this is good"? I mean, do they give you a little bit of a heads up, like this might?
No, of course not, because that's an unusual reaction. But that's just how varied the biology is. Now, maybe I could find something that did, because that's why there are different opiates. Maybe I could find one that did work. I'm not interested in that.
I have a friend who's diagnosed bipolar, and she's always she's gone back and forth between medications, and some that were like got her on point, and then some made her a little crazy with her kids, where she was like, "I want to drive this car off a bridge."
Yeah, you got to be careful.
And now it's gotten to the point where she's just like, "I don't even want to screw with it. I don't have the time to try to like." She's cautious to just, I guess, trial and error.
Bipolar 1 or 2? Do we know?
I'm not sure.
But I mean, if it's one, I mean, you got to be careful. I mean, it's, you know, then she's, what that means is she's becoming manic. That's when they start rejecting their medication. They start liking the manias and stuff. And
but there was a time when she was on, was that, I can't
so
remember what
dangerous
it was,
when bipolars don't take their meds. I mean,
but she should be on something, yeah.
Yeah.
And she, yeah, she just to reject it altogether right now, I feel like is.
That means she's becoming manic. So watch what happens. It gets bad. Just get ready to pounce.
Holy crap. Yeah. Look at that. Do you think our access as a general public to medical knowledge, your WebMD.coms, mm-hmm. like we look up what we have, we self-diagnose on the internet.
Yeah.
Is that dangerous to come into a doctor's office and just say, I know what I have? Or?
No. It's not dangerous to come in motivated and mm-hmm. informed, okay? But it is foolish to think that you're going to to think that somehow that
you can treat it by just
no. I don't know how to say it. Let me think. Because you're not going to the doctor for their fund of knowledge. You're mm-hmm. not. So go armed with the knowledge, so you can have an intelligent conversation and share in the decision making with the doctor. But do not for a second think you know a tiniest minuscule amount about this condition in the real world. Mm-hmm. Because what you're going to a physician for, the fund of knowledge you have, he or she had in their first or second year of medical school. What you're going to the doctor for is the 10,000 times he or she has seen that, mm-hmm. that condition, mm-hmm. so he or she can apply their judgment and their wisdom to your particular unique circumstances.
Gotcha.
So even if you make the right diagnosis, knowing what to do, that requires judgment. My prostate thing was a perfect example of that. I was like, I don't need to see an internist. My wife said, yes, you do. I'm like, I don't know. And he was like, your PSA went up a little bit. You ought to see a urologist. I'm like, oh, come on now. Urologist goes, it must be prostatitis. Treats me. Doesn't go down. You need a biopsy. I'm like, oh, for Christ's sake. Come on, guys. You guys are overdoing it. I would never do that for myself. Well, I'm old cancer. And so the point is, you don't make judgments about yourself. There was their intuition. They had a feeling. They had a sense. By the book, I shouldn't have been biopsied, but that judgment is why I went, and God damn it, that's why I'm good now. So you don't argue with the doctor about what you go in, you go, that's your call, that's your judgment, let's go do it. And by the way, I was observed for 2 years. I had this thing for a couple of years.
Cancer. Prostate cancer.
Yeah, and so they were observing him, observing, because I wanted to, you know, there's active surveillance. You don't have to go run to surgery when you have cancer, certain cancers. And when it became time to go, it was not really clear why. He just had kind of like, I don't think I can continue. It's something about this kind of bothering me. What? Well, it's kind of progressing. It's kind of, let's go. Boom. Turned out we really needed to go. And so it's just, that's what you go for, is that kind of intuition and judgment calls.
Dude, that's what happened with Jim Henson had that pneumonia, that he just, that he avoided because he thought he was just like, a cold and whatever. That became this like, streptococcal pneumonia or something.
Yeah.
But like, do you think a lot of people are quick to just kind of, shoved to the side, any sort
men
of
– are.
Yeah, we are.
Right? We always are. But again, don't – just because the information is there, don't mm-hmm. believe you have the applied knowledge. And just the information is easy. That's just like a language.
Right.
But applying it in a live biological circumstance, very complicated. That's why we do 10 years of training after have that information in our head.
And then people – it's got to be a little bit of a slap in the face for people then to come in with like a couple sentences on a website
They come in with huge stacks of stuff.
Oh, for real?
Oh, and it's like
– want you to read it?
Oh, they demand me to read it. I'm like – and every page to me says the sky is blue, the sky is blue, the sky is blue. Yeah. I know the sky is blue. I know this.
Wow.
I've known since second year medical school the sky is blue. I know what chronic lymphocytic leukemia is. Yeah, I've dealt with it 40,000 times and – now let me apply my judgment to your circumstance.
I have a friend right now, and he and his wife are about to give birth, and I kind of casually made a joke like, "Oh, well, you're not
gonna Mike Catherwood." Is it Catherwood?
No, but I kind of casually made a joke that was like, "Oh, well, you're not going to do that Jenny McCarthy thing where you don't vaccinate." And he goes, "Oh, well, no, we're not going to vaccinate." And I went, "Are you fucking crazy?"
I know.
And I said, "There's nothing."
It's always people that have never studied biology.
Yeah. And
go study biology.
Wait, vaccinate
please.
The child?
You and
please study biology, everybody. Please
back me up on this.
Real
biology. The whole vaccinations cause autism, so don't vaccinate your kid. It's bullshit, right?
Absolutely.
My sister, I don't think, has vaccinated my nieces yet, who are four.
It's terrible. It's really a mistake.
She's concerned for the same thing.
It's a terrible mistake.
And I said
right,
that
hey,
like
if you're listening.
Yeah. Here's the reality. That's kind of a weird denial because they've never seen measles. They've never seen a kid die of measles. They've never seen real illness. They've never seen it.
Right.
I've seen a lot. You want to avoid that. I vaccinate the shit out of my kids. It's everything they can possibly get, I give them.
Can that be the title of your next book, please?
I vaccinate the shit out of my kids. Yeah, when that HPV thing came out, I was like, I called their pediatrician. Do you want to give it? Yep, give it myself.
Wow.
I didn't order it. The pediatrician ordered, I administered it.
Yeah, because I told them, like, no, there's no actual medical evidence that says
But they don't understand how to evaluate biological science.
Because their response was, but you never know.
Oh, yeah. See.
But you never know is not medical.
Yeah. It's not even an answer.
No doctor says, take this pill because you never know.
Yeah.
Here's they don't the say that.
I can't even address it.
When did your interest in, obviously, like the medical field, but like how did you cross over with Loveline? No, like in hosting, becoming
Well, you heard the story. I told you a story about how I started doing radio.
Yes.
And that's where it started. I just kept doing it. I just got interested. Okay. And you got a bug for it after that. I kept increasing my training to be able to answer the kinds of things that were coming up in Loveline and stuff. I worked in a psychiatric hospital for years and stuff. And I started realizing that really in media, mental health stuff really has much. Well, particularly these days where it's really such an underserved issue, media is a domain to really address some of that stuff.
Right. And do you enjoy all like the on camera and like stuff?
Yeah. It was always sort of something that was like, I enjoy it. It's fun. It's creative. I have a new little social life around it. Yeah. So I've met my wife through radio and things.
Right.
And it's like, but leave me alone. I'm practicing medicine.
Of course.
I was practicing medicine like 110 hours a week. It was crazy.
Jesus.
I was such a bad workaholic for a long time.
During what time?
And you're not a workaholic now?
You have
nine
jobs. Leisurely compared to what I used to be like.
Wow.
That was in the late 80s, right through at 95.
110 hours
really,
a week?
Really
doing
bad.
What?
I would get up at 5 in the morning. I would see between 8 and 15 severely ill medical, often critically ill patients. I did a lot of ICU work. I would then go to my medical practice and see between 20 and 40 patients.
Jesus.
Then I would go to my second job, which was at a psychiatric hospital, where I would see at least 3 consults and 10 follow-ups.
You're mentally wiped at that.
And then – oh, yeah. I'd struggle to get home by 10 o'clock every night and then do it again. And on my weekends off – I would do nursing home rounds for 8 hours a day. Weekends off. Weekends on, same schedule.
Same schedule.
And this was all just to accumulate, I mean, so much experience that you're prepared for every scenario?
I just was, you know, workaholic.
Thirsty for more
just
experience?
A work, I just,
yeah.
And
I,
you
I
still
bought
are.
Into this whole
well,
still
but
am, just like everyone's always an
where,
alcoholic.
Right. Well, but
I'm managed.
To the point where when you added more podcasts that you do, I said, why did you add the Drew and Carolla show? Why'd you do Dr. Drew podcast? You said, well, the HLN show gave me 2 days off.
That's a free time. Yeah, it's a free time.
That's free time.
And it's interesting. It's creative and it's fun and it's social. And it's, I get, you know, I didn't eat sitting down for 8 years.
Right. But you pee sitting down for 25 years.
I would struggle to find time to pee every day. Struggle.
For real, right?
For real.
That's actually a great question. Like when you're seeing that many patients and you can't, your breaks.
Struggle.
You value time.
No
so
hyperbole.
Much now,
struggling to find time to urinate.
And forgetting that you even have to or not?
No, but like it may take a half hour after acknowledging I needed to be able to get to the point where I could.
Because you just
That's
can't.
That's insanity.
Wow.
That's
it is.
Insanity. Yeah.
And I want our listeners to realize that if anyone listening is like, Dr. Drew, some executive just said
no,
we need
no.
a doctor
no,
that
no,
like
no.
the spokesperson.
Jesus,
no,
close.
You're here because you put in 110 hour
work
weeks.
A lot of crazy stuff. A lot of crazy stuff. And then the media thing just sort of evolved, and I was always like, no, I'll do it. Like Loveline TV. I'm like, okay, I'll do it Friday afternoon, Saturday afternoon, but leave me alone, leave me alone, leave me alone.
Yeah.
Well, when I started doing Life Changers and HLN.
Mm-hmm.
I had to really shrink everything down to almost nothing, and that was when I officially looked at myself and said, "Okay, dude, you're officially in television.
Yeah,
stop it. You're on to your second career. You can do some medicine, but you are on to your second career now.
How
and
long?
So that's been fun.
Yeah,
I'm in my 50s. You know, it's time.
Did you anticipate Loveline being as
no? I didn't anticipate. I didn't say anything.
You can't,
I didn't say
right?
anything. I'm shocked. If you when I go to like speak in front of colleges and stuff, that is one of my heroes in the other room, Dan Siegel. He's going to come on my podcast.
Wonderful.
Oh, great.
When I stand in front of colleges and talk about it, the first thing I say is like, if you had told me 20 years ago I'd be here, I'd like, what? I don't know what the f- you're talking about.
Really?
It sort of gradually like, grew.
You just got into it to share your knowledge and help?
It was like a combination. I think it was fun. I had no social life, so it was an interesting way to meet people. And
sure.
Sort of, I'd meet like, you know.
Who are some of the people you've met?
It was 1983,
okay.
And Berlin would come in and be, you know, the guest.
Shit.
And I'd come
on
in,
line, yeah.
And I'd come in and answer a couple questions, you know. Wow. And so it was fascinating. And I'd meet colorful people and stuff, and it's kind of creative and interesting. And by the way, what got me going was HIV and AIDS, which had not – there was no HIV yet. There was barely the term AIDS. We were actually just been calling it GRIDS, and now we're starting to call it AIDS. And I just thought it was really important to talk about – something we ended up calling safe sex, but we weren't calling it that yet because I just knew what young people were up to. And I thought, somebody's got to talk to them about this. Thing's coming, man. You got to watch this. And I was putting people on the ground hand over fist. Just unbelievable.
What about HIV got you so revved up or just curious?
Because they were just dying all around us.
Is it amazing that magic is living as successfully as it is?
No, it's not to me. I knew one day we would get it. What I want is an apology from the people in the late 80s, early 90s who were insisting that the medication, which are now have turned this thing into a chronic illness and have saved people's lives, they were insisting that it was causing the illness. And my patients were dying one after the other because they were refusing to take their medicines because they read something in Spin magazine. Why aren't those people held accountable? Why aren't they held accountable? Why aren't journalists held accountable for shit they print that kill people?
Absolutely. It, like in the medical community, when you say, hey, don't do this, eat this food. It's great. Like, and then it turns out to be terrible.
You hear about it. Somebody takes action.
Do you continue to see patients today?
Yeah. In fact, I got to go in tomorrow for a bunch of patients. I got a bunch of stuff tomorrow.
No kidding.
No.
Yeah. But you're still – I mean, my dad's a doctor too, and he's almost 70. He still loves it.
I didn't know
He was a cardiovascular surgeon in Seattle growing up, and now he just
works at
that
is hardcore.
Yeah, I mean, lots of open-heart surgery.
That's hardcore.
And he's not doing it to that extent anymore, which I think he misses. But he just loves – he's still going to conferences all the time. He just loves to learn.
It's a big part of you. It's hard to give it up when you spend so much of your life doing it, making it – you know, and then you get it's just a big part of it because a male, it just becomes who you are.
Yeah,
sure.
It's really hard. This year when I started cutting down to a very limited extent, it freaked me out. It was hard.
That's who you were for so long.
It's not never going to not be who I am. So yeah. It's hard to let go.
Well, you see the same thing with NFL football coaches when they get fired. Like they're putting in God knows how many hours and they get fired and they don't know what to do. They have time off and they end up taking an assistant job or ESPN. Yep. Like they have the money, but it's just who they are. They have to do it.
No,
and you have to help people.
Obviously in Loveline, you guys are like addressing a lot of like issues, but like, you know, you're a funny dude and you have a good sense of humor. So like at what point do you have to like, and you know, Adam, like
it's
providing
it's
more
a,
of the
it's
comedy.
It's a navigation.
Yeah. Because if you hear somebody describe a problem that like.
No, you got to see this is I've tried to figure out why I take shit so much. I do take a lot of shit and I don't understand why because I'm really just trying to do good, trying to help.
Yeah.
And I think it's because I've specifically been willing to ride in vehicles that sort of push the envelope because I've always felt that, hey, if you don't track the eyes and ears, you can't deliver messages.
Right.
And what do I know about attracting eyes and ears? Corolla knows. You guys know. So I'll come with you. I'll play along. And then I get to occasionally drop in some good stuff. But you can't drop in too much of that because that's not very entertaining.
Right.
So in order – Corolla – beat that into me for many years.
Right, sure.
You just witnessed it on our show today.
Sure, sure, sure.
But
you're
so
only
that's
human.
Sort of,
but it's like if you
but
hear
that's it. Sort of been my thing. So I try to, you know, develop as much of the entertainment piece as I can without
shunning the
well without violating or somehow demeaning or diminishing
totally.
The messages.
Because a lot of these people are all calling with genuine
it's
they
hard.
Really want.
It's a really interesting dance to walk. It's hard.
Yeah, when someone calls in and says, hey, my semen is burning my woman's vagina
what's
or something.
What's going on with you, Brad? What's happening?
Well, listen.
What's going on with you?
Yeah, but even if the guy was like, my
Brazil.
What if the guy didn't mean to make a joke and he was like, you know, my semen smells like, you know, two different types of Skittles. And
well, and on HLN I deal with this a lot because we're trying to make a lighthearted entertainment show that hooks to the news that also still doesn't violate my brand and my messaging.
Right.
And, you know, Jodi Arias, it's pretty easy to laugh about some of that craziness. And people would literally just come screaming back, this is about murder. Or what's her name? Casey Anthony.
Yeah,
there's a dead child here and you're making fun of it. This is – it's like, no. it's a spoonful of sugar, guys. It's just right. These are tough topics, and we're trying to make it digestible.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, yeah, because if you just keep saying a child died, no one wants to watch that.
And it gets too – right.
So
right.
You'd be
amazed what people think they understand about – you guys must get some of this too.
Oh, yeah.
People going to tell you how to do your job. And it's not an easy job to make stuff that people watch and listen to.
So,
it's not easy.
And you have it from two different angles.
I see like man. Yeah. your face. I see it. It's hard, right?
Yeah. And you have people telling you how to be a doctor and, how to be an entertainer.
Coming and going. That's right. Because I have doctors telling me how I should do entertainment. And I have people that aren't doctors telling me how I should be a doctor, which is really frustrating.
Since you do have a finite amount of free time, and we'll wrap this up, what do you like to do? Like, I mean, other than be on Wheel of Fortune?
You know,
you were on that, right?
Yes, 30 years ago.
Yeah, that was a dream of mine as a child, by the way.
Well, a friend of mine.
I'm going to be a Ninja Turtle and shake Pat
Sajak's hand. I had a 2-week period between medical school and residency. A friend of mine in medical school had gone on and won a car, and I was like, Jesus, if he can do it, then I could get on there and win something.
I went to medical school.
He was a medical student with me, but I thought, I'm the same as him.
Yeah.
That damn wheel, when it goes against you, you don't factor that part in.
You know, like
the woman next to me just killed, and it kept going bad with me every time.
But free time, like what do you?
Free time, I love hanging with my family and stuff. We do a lot of that.
You have three kids?
I have triplets. Yeah. They're 21.
Whoa.
Yeah, we're traveling. We're going to go to Europe this vacation. Awesome.
Have they ever been?
They've been. Thankfully,
triplets. What is that? It's when insanity. You hear that, because there's a time.
Oh, I was running a residency program. I was chief resident. I was running with an administrator, and the administrator halfway through the year, I relied on her very heavily. We ran this thing together. Halfway through the year, she pulls me in her office. She goes, "I'm not going to be here the next semester." I'm like, "Oh my god, no! Yeah. I rely on you." Mm-hmm. She goes, "I'm having triplets," and I go, "Who has triplets? That's so bizarre. Triplets. Oh my god.
Yeah."
Little did I know.
Holy shit.
Isn't that crazy?
Was it a natural triplets or was it in vitro?
No, fertility campaign. Sure.
Yeah.
In vitro, for sure.
Yeah.
But damn it, I'm jumping around, but I forgot. Here's what I like doing. I like lifting weights and listening to iTunes U lectures. I devour them.
What are those?
I go to iTunes U, man. It's just every university, particularly check out Berkeley and Yale and Stanford, they have complete –
that's incredible.
Series. Like
you probably learned so much from
everything. Everything I always wanted to, like I didn't have time to do in college and stuff, I just filled it up.
That's exactly what it is. You're getting free
college from some of the world's greatest lecturers.
Known thing?
Do people, yes, right. iTunes U. Go on iTunes U. It's the best thing ever.
You do a lot of that, though. You speak at colleges.
I do speak some. Medical school. I try to speak at SC at least every year.
Nice.
Yeah, look at that.
I'm at first-year students.
Dr. Drew, addiction. Improving your life in all ways, shapes, and forms.
I used to have third-year students. We did it for years. We had them on the addiction unit, and that was good. We really were really giving them an understanding of this. We'd have them for a couple of weeks. And now, no more. So now I don't know what the hell. They're just getting my one lecture in first year.
Wait, what about you? Now you're on like 20 TV shows. So do you watch TV shows? Is there anything you?
I like Breaking Bad. I like Mad Men. I like Boardwalk Empire. I love Legit. I'm beyond Legit.
Dude, that's incredible. And,
is Eric the Actor going to be on with us this season?
Yes,
or not?
He is. Eric the Actor. You might know him as Eric the Midget from the Howard Stern Show. He will be on this season of Legit. I just did 3 episodes with them, so they did tell me about their experiences with Eric the Actor.
He was talking about it on the air. It was unbelievable. It's the craziest thing I've ever heard. But I'm glad he's on. I know Jim wanted him on, so it's good. Like Legit, I like Louie. I like Girls. Believe it or not.
Yeah, it's a great show. So, HBO does everything right. Yeah. Dawson's Creek, maybe? You were on that too, right?
We didn't like it, but I was on it,
Drew, I know you have 30
million
jobs.
Thank you for doing your homework, by the way.
Don't worry. We got the Wheel of Fortune, and we got the Dawson's Creek references.
Actually, I just rewatched the entire season, 5 seasons, and so I just saw
Dawson's
it on
Creek?
Yeah.
No, fantastic.
Just for you.
You need a hobby.
Thank you for –
thanks for doing this.
Thank you
anytime.
Always for putting us in.
You guys are the greatest. Full support. Whatever we do, support you guys. We love you, as you know.
At Dr. Drew on Twitter.
Please.
At Dr. Drew on Twitter.
Hey, go see the HLN show. That's for 2014. That's my big push. I want to get that show where it needs to be.
Go on HLN. Watch Dr.
6 o'clock, 9 o'clock. Dr. Drew on call.
Listen to the Dr. Drew podcast on the Corolla Digital family of podcast. Yeah. Dr. Drew, thank you so much.
If you like listening to comedy, try watching it on the internet. The folks behind the Sideshow Network have launched a new YouTube channel called Wait For It. It's got interviews with comedians like Reggie Watts, Todd Glass, Liza Schlesinger, I've been friends with her for 10 years, one of the funniest people out there, and I still have a hard time with the last name, Liza. Our very own Owen Benjamin, that's me, takes you on a musical journey down internet rabbit holes and much more. You don't have to wait any longer. Just go to youtube.com/waitforitcomedy. There's no need to wait for it anymore because it's here and it's funny. And I love you.